Yes. Okay. So what I'm going to do is just show you this, which is going to tell you about the Value Education Certificate Program. We have lots of different programs. One of them is the Certificate Program. Normally I look at the computer and see both of them, but I'll have to look like this. It'll be all right. Huh? No, no, I stand around. I stand. Okay. So anyway, it works. The Value Education programs are designed for adults. They're very good for BKs, but they're also good for non-BKs. Basically, it's been prepared for students of professional courses, English-speaking graduates. You know that this is run mostly in India, but it's been done in a number of other countries. And it involves a lot of experimentation and new ways of applying spiritual knowledge. So we're looking at the 20 to 55-year-old age range, which is not... Huh? It's okay, you just get under the wire. So we've got a number of different books, and I'm going to just bring them because you can have a look at them. So these are some samples that you can look at. One of them you can see is in Hindi, and you can just pass them around. There's several certificate courses that we've done now, and this particular one uses number 1, number 2, number 4, 5, and 6. The full diploma course has 12 modules, and you have got 8 there, including also the Hindi one, and the other 4 are practical ones. Those are what you have are the, theoretical courses. So we've decided now to make a number of different certificate courses using particular modules. And this particular one is very, very easy. It's very gyani, so it's very easy for BKs to work with. But we found over the last year that a number of different people wanted different configurations of the certification, and so we've done it like that as well. You can see we select particular units. We usually have it a 5-day program is good, but we can do it, we can do a 1-day or a 2-day or a 3-day. But, with a 5-day you get a really good sense of it. And, within that you have about 8 sessions on values and spirituality. We have PowerPoint presentations like this, and meditation and group discussion. In the diploma program, we go in a lot for the dialogue system, which is very deep, very confrontational in a sense, and because it makes you face yourself. And if you don't face yourself, there's not really any chance of any actual development, so that's quite important. Anyway, the first session of this particular certificate course starts with the first chapter of the module number 1, which you're not looking at. That's that one over there, the yellow one. And the first thing we look at is a concept, definition, and classification of values, because a lot of people have preconceptions about values. And lately we have been making a big case for the big difference between moral values and ethical values. And mostly, if you look in the dictionary, you look under moral, it'll tell you ethical, and you look under ethical, it'll tell you moral. And the way we distinguish these two is that ethical correspond to what we call in BKs the laws of spirituality. And moral corresponds to what human beings have figured out is right and wrong. But from a BK point of view, we know that they have done this from a Rajo Pradhan intellect, if not Tamil Pradhan. And so you get a lot of things that are moral, but they're not at all ethical. And so we put the moral values as a second, in the second position in the hierarchy of values. How do you avoid confronting religions? You just don't confront them, that's how you... Of course it comes from religion. Moral comes from... you see, it's not that moral comes from religion. Religion comes from moral. And if you want to look at it like that, just a minute, there's a little phone call here. Religions have become social institutions. And the way that the religious authorities describe right and wrong corresponds to the morality of a particular society. And depending on the religion, depending on the society gives more pressure to the religion, or the religion gives more pressure to the society. But the combined gathering is what we call morality, you see. And that's the majority of people in any given society. And so we go into that in a lot of detail. Okay, the next one, we're looking at a little bit more details, huh? The concept of values is described as the moral, ethical, and spiritual values espoused and respected by society. And mostly, on first look, you wouldn't think that there's any conflict between moral, ethical, and spiritual values. But as you go deeper and deeper into it, you find that there's a lot of conflict. And not very many people are ready to go into that. And so, really, you have to be very sensitive to who you're talking to as to how far in you want to go. So this is why I say this program is not particularly for the public, unless you're a very, very good and knowledgeable teacher about this and you have all the necessary sensitivities. But it's quite interesting for BKs. So, another definition is the aspirations of religions and philosophies that aim to guide people along the path to a better existence. And now, we give importance to definitions because lack of clear definitions creates contradictions, and where you have no clear definition, any activity or policy that may not be moral or ethical can be cleverly described as a value in order to justify its application. And this is where you may get into some controversial discussion. We're not really here to try and prove or disprove anything. But what we are trying to do with this course is to get people to think about their preconceptions, about the attitudes and social ideas that they have absorbed from their surrounding society since childhood and that they haven't really thought about. And so a lot of people just don't think about these things, and if you do start asking questions, in many societies you're going to get punished for that. But it's necessary and it's important because this lack of clear definitions does cause moral confusion, and actions contrary to the spirit and meaning of values gets performed. And this is why we have a lot of anti-values among people who talk a lot about values. I haven't. Well, if you want to be a successful politician, it can be a very valuable little art, the art of creating moral confusion. And so most people, they, you know, get swept along by different kinds of propaganda, whether it's political or religious. It works very well because it's very upsetting for people to really sit down and think about what's really right and wrong, because you find out that the people who are in charge of what's right and wrong are not all that ethical a lot of the time. And so that puts you in a very uncomfortable position. But anyway, we go ahead and we think about these things. So, another definition, the values are the principles, standards, and ideals which are essential to participate in life as a social being. That's a very easy definition to work with. I don't think many people could have a problem with that. This next one is very good. Values are self-imposed rules or the ethical policy you adopt to travel through life with a clear conscience. And so the value education program really works with this one a lot, because it gives a lot of importance to the principle that we have in Brahma Kumaris, change the self to change the world. So what we're trying to do with people who become students of this course is to encourage individuals to make their own personal ethical policy and to define it clearly and to observe where they deviate from it and how far, and then to find out ways in which they can reduce the gap between what they say they their ethics are and what they actually demonstrate. And so it's not at all for children. This is a very adult type of course. We have to clarify these kinds of values, and these moral, ethical, spiritual values are abstract. They're intangible. And so one way to clarify it is to contrast them with the material values. And the thing about the material values, and of course you're very aware, everybody's aware that we live in a highly materialistic culture. And for example, the school teachers and university teachers tell me that the students, or this generation of students, are ultra-materialistic, ultra, you know. And so that means that the ethics and morality and spirituality is very, very far down in the list of priorities. So this is a program that really calls upon people to think. And again, as I said before, people are not very keen on doing that, because it makes you aware that your intellect is not very sharp, not very well greased, and to some extent quite dysfunctional. And so it's a lot of hard work. But unless we really try to identify our values, articulate them, and state the reasons why they are our values, we tend to go through life without applying them consciously. And this is where we get the hypocrisy. So all that's covered in the first session. A second session, the necessity for education in values in India. And so we look at the implications for the individual, which is that it enriches your personality and frees you from double standards. The implication for society is that it does equip people properly for civic life and inspires people to act with awareness of things like environmental pollution. And it empowers people to resist greed, selfishness, violence. It reduces drug use, gambling, and other addictions. There are many addictions that are absolutely moral, completely legal, but very bad for you. Like computer games, watching television, going shopping, eating too much ice cream, you know. And these are serious illnesses nowadays. So what we're trying to do is develop people who are well-informed, who are sensitive, and embodiments of a society that is rich in human, moral, and spiritual values, which is basically what the Golden Age would be. So we have to get closer and closer to that. How have values in India been eroded? Partly the application of science and technology has been done without reference to values. There is extreme exploitation of nature. We notice a lot of increase in violence and increasing use of intoxicants, lack of education in values at all levels. You know, the government of India has made a law that says that you have to have value education at all levels of your schooling. But practical reality is that they tend to put the value education class at the end of the day, so when everybody's tired out. A lot of the time they don't have a curriculum. The students are totally bored with what they do have because it's outdated, irrelevant, and inappropriate. And so very often it's just like a private study period and it doesn't actually happen. The folklore has a very, very big influence in India, but it sometimes teaches values, but a lot of the time it teaches anti-values. For example, it promotes casteism, disrespect for women, and religious intolerance. And so if you start to say, well, we're having a problem with the folklore, then the folklorists are going to have a problem with you. So the thing about this is to, it's really a course which is talking to people who are already well on their way to developing values, to give you a vocabulary, to give you clarity, so that you can articulate what you feel in your heart in a more effective way. And that's so that you can represent values better. One of the things that India is known for is corruption. And so the definition of corruption, a lot of people don't even know what is exactly corruption. So it is to use or to be willing to use political or social power to perform dishonest or illegal actions in return for money or some advantage. That is corruption. And there are other definitions of corruption that are connected with sexual harassment and sexual favors and this sort of thing. Who participates in corruption? Basically, individuals who are seeking self-aggrandizement through abuse of power, which then further reduces the quality of life for the majority of people through the instruments of government. So that means that corruption is an institutionalized system, and so you can't really do anything about it. It's operating at all levels of the state and in business, education, administration, and the media. And this is the main reason why this particular program is not in the conventional educational system. So we have decided to keep it within our own campuses, and to offer it to different people from different institutions or educational establishments. But they come here and they study it in our way, and then they go back and use it or not, however they want. But basically what we find is corruption can only be prevented by voluntary self-restraint together with inspiring leadership. It's not going to come. Wait a minute. Okay, this is a little cartoon from Purity. which you know very well. And this is the Netaji, the politician, saying to some press people, look, corruption is a worldwide problem now, so don't try and malign us on this score. A little message from our president, Dr. APJ Abdul Kalam. Let us do what India needs from us. That is to say, we need to recognize the power of each individual to inspire and affect change. Now, although India is a non-individualist society, nevertheless, when you do have a very powerful individual who is the living embodiment of certain principles, it goes over very well in Indian society, but they will give you a hard time in the process of trying to make sure that you're solid, and that is absolutely valid. So all that is in the second session. The third session, how exactly are we going to develop our spirituality and values? And this comes from the module number 2. First of all, what do we actually need? We need a good atmosphere, and this is one of the reasons why we want to do the program right here in our environment, because it's clean, it's vegetarian, it's corruption-free, and we bring people into an atmosphere where there's powerful meditation, and this helps them to pick up on a very subliminal level the things that we're talking about. We need an inspiring curriculum, so we work to make this curriculum very interesting and relevant. Really good quality interaction between teachers and students is very necessary. Otherwise, the conventional education system is one-way traffic. Teachers speak, students sit quiet and answer the questions in a particular way, otherwise they're out. And that's not very interesting for the students. So we use what's called the inductive methodology, where the teachers and students are kind of partners, working to understand different concepts. We like to encourage people's leadership qualities, and nothing can go very far without commitment, of course. Now, in any kind of educational setup, there's a question of social deviance, and so we want to actually move people away from the idea of punitive correction, because it contributes to low self-esteem, crime, indiscipline, and breakdown in families and social systems. So it's completely ineffective and counterproductive. What we have to do is to set boundaries for and clear guidelines for personal discipline, and these have to be balanced with love, respect, kindness, and sensitivity. Meditation training is absolutely essential. Counseling is very important, because most people come from some kind of traumatic experience in life. Anybody who, where the parents are not getting along, are traumatized and they're not able to study. Just that is enough, you know. Anyone where there's illness in the family, where there's violence in the family, where there's financial problems in the family, all of these things create disturbances in the student, and so they need counseling for these things, let alone the very traumatic experiences that are quite common. And then, of course, also to establish and maintain good rapport. In all of this, we have to develop a higher consciousness, and of course, this program is very good for BKs, because BKs are already developing a higher conscience, a consciousness, because values and spirituality flourish in the fertile ground of a higher consciousness. And higher consciousness, one of the meanings of that is that you have greater awareness based on accurate information, and you have a refined perspective on the meaning of life and of your own identity. So you are perceiving society and yourself with deeper insight. So when you do have a higher consciousness, or as you develop a higher consciousness, it changes your perception and you start to be powerful enough to take personal responsibility for what you do and what is happening to you. And therefore, there's naturally going to be an improvement in your personal relationships. Your meditation is going to bring you close to your inner landscape, and of course, you're going to develop the power of concentration. So the session number four, we go into consciousness and the divine, and this will give you a lot of details of the basic knowledge of BKs. So, first of all, a definition of consciousness, which comes from the dictionary, so that it's a neutral definition. Consciousness means internal knowledge or conviction. It is awareness and responsiveness of the mind by itself, of itself and the world. It is sensitivity and concern. It is your normal waking state. And basically, it means awareness. Now, going further into the depth of what consciousness is that which exists independently of matter, beyond the material world of sense perceptions. And so we look at human existence as a spiritual reality set in the context of material space and time. Now, we look at what psychologists say, because psychology is a kind of interface between science and spirituality. So it helps to bridge the gap. So psychologists have observed that meditation and spiritual practice allow a person to enter a higher plane of consciousness. And this is what prompts you to develop your moral and ethical sense. So this is very key. Piece of information. And only then is it possible for you to live completely from your moral and spiritual values. In other words, if a person doesn't meditate, forget about developing values. It's not possible. And so anybody who is against meditation is, by definition, against the development of values. And so you have to bring people to a point where they see this, so that they can then drop some of their barriers against meditation. So there's another thing that psychologists have said. They distinguish two modes of perception. One is the intuitive and the other is the intellectual. So modern science favors the intellectual, and the ancient spiritual traditions favor the intuitive. So you have a polarization, and whatever your view of reality is determined by your consciousness. So the ancient spiritual traditionists and the modern scientists don't see eye to eye because they're on opposite sides of the fence. So what we need is some kind of fusion of the intuitive and the intellectual in order to live a balanced and meaningful life. So we're talking here about a transformation of consciousness. So one is to raise the level of consciousness and the other is to transform it also. And so clear definitions of the different aspects of consciousness are necessary to understand the origins and processes of our thinking. And we need to establish the link between the state of human consciousness and the rise or decline in human values. So the reason why we have a problem of values and ethics is because we have low-level consciousness. Not because people don't know about values, but because the consciousness is weak and also false. So we have a distinction here. True consciousness, we would say, is when the soul is aware of itself as a soul, and false consciousness is when the soul is aware of itself as a body, which it isn't. So all that is in the that session. Then the next one, we go further to God, the supreme source of values. And again, we move further into spirituality, because a lot of people think that the source of values is your mother and father, if not your teacher, or else your religion. But what we're saying here is that these are not the source. You have to go further to find the source, which is God himself. And what is God and who is God? So God is a loving God who enriches, educates, blesses, and benefits. A supreme being with a supreme mind and heart, whose each drop of wisdom contains power and works secretly in hidden pockets of your being where negativity has been lodged and has quietly caused you harm like a deeply buried infection. Because whenever you experience some kind of severe negative situation in your home life as a child, this is going to leave a scar in you. And you're going to develop some kind of coping mechanism to handle that thing. And this is what turns into a character defect, you see. And that operates in your adult life. So that whatever is dysfunctional in your early life gets perpetuated, and you then give that as an inheritance to your kids. And so it gets worse and worse. So meditation gets you to a point where you start thinking very deeply and you start to gain insights, and then your interpretation of life becomes purer, wiser, and more refined. And then it's possible for you to be free from reacting to those things. So again, your connection with God, you are talking about a God who is dwelling in light. So we're talking about God above and beyond religions. A timeless, spaceless, measureless location beyond the dimensions of matter and thought. And so in meditation, you carry your mind to that world of perfect peace and quiet to rest, refresh, and recharge your inner being. And then we point out that deep within each soul, there is an ancient subconscious memory of their spiritual creator. So when you go deep into silence, this memory gets awakened and you start to be able to connect with God as in a very personal way, which is nothing to do with religious beliefs. And then you see meditation means the absorption of divine qualities. So this kind of truth that we're talking about is very simple. It's subtle, though, and it's deep and it's pure. And the idea is to be able to regain your original high levels of purity, peace, bliss, and love. And we have a fifth one, power. And these are what I call the five elements of the soul: purity, peace, power, love, and bliss. And then if you keep company in your mind with the Supreme Being, this is the key to the development and cultivation of values. And by this connection, you're just constantly being fed by that source of values, virtues, and qualities. And then visible changes begin to happen in your activities and behavior when your connection is strong and frequent. So then the sixth session is on meditation. Now, how are you going to meditate? So a definition of meditation as being the deep and purposeful thought about eternal verities. Single-track thinking, and therefore instant recognition when you deviate from your intended focus. And then you are selecting thought patterns that are positive, useful, and leading to your chosen goals. So this is a very down-to-earth definition of meditation, which has nothing to do with religion. And so why would one meditate? So first of all, to restore spiritual self-awareness and power to the soul, and then to engender real and lasting character development, to make the mind clear, strong, and able to think logically and consistently. to develop greater discretion and generosity, to build integrity and purity. So not too many people would have a problem with these definitions and aims of meditation. Okay, so what do you need for meditation? A clean and uncluttered environment. Sit where you're balanced and comfortable. Turn your mind within. Keep your eyes open, but your attention internalized. Start with short periods and build up to longer ones. Try to establish a sustainable rhythm, because meditation is cumulative. So we have the four stages of meditation that you're quite familiar with: the initiation, meditation, concentration, and realization. And so you can go into the details of that if you're talking to people about this. Then the seventh session is on positive thinking. And so for that, you just go a little bit more into the actual nature of thought. Thinking determines how you experience your life. It's the most subtle form of action. It includes imagination, fantasy, reactions, and responses to sense impressions. It is association and sensitivity to sound, pictures, fragrance, touch, and taste. It takes place in your soul and is immediately reflected on your body. So there's some principles of positive thinking, and the first and most important, the foundation, is self-respect. And you want to create thoughts which are free from opposition and resistance, but of course your thoughts are full of having to deal with opposition and resistance, and this is actually the work of a positive thinker, is to face, deal, keep going forward. And then you have a consistent refusal to engage in projection. So a lot of people have this habit of having something going on in their mind and projecting it onto somebody and seeing them that way, which has nothing to do with what they are. Positive thinking is also called an attitude of enlightened self-interest. So we have another show where we go into the details of that. Is based in regard for the self in spite of things like defamation or loss or failure. And then positive thinking means you have thoughts of love, peace, faith, courage, enthusiasm, and happiness. So another thing you can ask people, what is your thinking like? Is your cup half full or half empty? It's anyway half. But if you think it's half full, you're more positive. If you think it's half empty, you're more negative. But actually, nothing is really good or bad. It's how you think about it that determines this. So we have a whole positive thinking process that we do with people who come to the course. And there's a sphere button or icon of self-respect. It's taken from a Murali from about 2004, Avyakta Murali, when Baba was talking all about self-respect. So these are 16 points of self-respect that people can work with. Then the last session is, we call this virtues, values, qualities, and powers. And because most people who were talking to me about value education were saying, well, okay, which values are you teaching them? And I would say, I'm not teaching them any values. I'm trying to get people to be value-based human beings. But yet there was so much demand, no, we have to have particular individual values. So we made one book with 50 values in it, that's the sixth book, and we found that it's, sometimes a value, sometimes a virtue, sometimes a quality, sometimes a power. So depends on the situation, how you use it, many, many things. So we have to think about them in that kind of way too. But it's really ultimately about self-cultivation. So you first have to learn to distinguish what is a value, a virtue, a power, and a quality, and discern and refine your own, and perhaps identify new ones that you may wish to cultivate. So this is a list of 48, because I fit it into three columns, otherwise we have 50, but anyway. Just an example of some of the lists that one can make. And these are the ones. They have about a half a page of description that you can use to think about. And then the last part of the course involves a spiritual retreat at Mount Abu. So we put that in a number of different ways, depending on whether somebody's a BK or a non-BK. Because if they're BK, their morning period starts with Amrit Vela and class. If they're non-BK, they would have the spiritual retreat part between 7 and 8 in the morning, or 6 and 8 in the morning, depending. And so if you want to know further about it, we have a website, and there's an email for people who want to do the trainings, and then that's my phone number if you want to have any more information. So that's the end of the show. I have another one I could show you, but there's not quite enough time, I don't think. Anyway, do you have any questions? We've done in South Africa, Singapore, Malaysia, and the Philippines. Well, what we do is we see who wants what, and we basically tailor it to who it is and how much time is available. And so in Malaysia, do you remember how long we had? It was about 3 days, I think, maybe. It wasn't there. Okay. And it was 3 days or 5 days. And you see, sometimes people say to me, okay, make a course for our people to be able to teach it. So a kind of teacher training course. And then some people say, make a course for our VIPs to come and get a nice experience. So then we'll make a course that way. And the ones in the Philippines, many of them were having a medical background, so we slanted it that way. And so what I'm trying to do is to build up a bank of PowerPoints, the books you have in your hand, additional articles, meditation commentaries, audio lectures, and so on. And so this year we thought that we will concentrate on building that bank and keeping it on a website, so that people who have at least, you know, we'll have different levels of people who will have different permissions for different things, depending on the extent of their exposure and their involvement with the BKs and so on and so forth. And so that's what we're going to try and do like this time. And I find that people can't just take a training course and become trainers just like that, because it's actually quite deep. And so what I encourage people to do is come to any course you want. This one that I just showed you about is what we generally give to BKs the first go around. Then we've had other people who are non-BKs who wanted particular subjects to be covered. And so then we made some tailor-made little other certificate courses using different chapters, different units from the different modules, and slanting it for their profession. And so then each time we do that, then we get another item. And so then you get, it's like I'm trying to create something like a sort of tunnel come department store, that you kind of go in and you can get this or get that. And some doors you can't go in until you've done some other things, and then you can go in those doors, and then you have another whole department to choose from. You can see module number 3, it talks about the religions, and a lot of people don't want to have anything to do with the touching the subject of religions, because it's a very sensitive subject. But I've had a lot of BKs tell me that they're very keen on that module, because it gives a very encapsulated description of the essentials of the six major religions that are practiced in India, which are Hinduism, Jainism, Buddhism, Islam, Christianity, and Sikhism. And all of these have a population of greater than 1%. So any one religion less than 1%, we didn't put it in. So, for example, Judaism is very small in India, so we didn't put it in. The slant of the books is oriented towards India, because that was my mandate, but it can be used anywhere, and you just slant how you present different bits of it for the particular culture that you're working with. So that's very easy to do. We did one pilot project in a university, and we issued a diploma for that because they did it for a year. And so I would visit the Veer Narmad South Gujarat University. We had 4 hours a week for a year. And the people who were studying it were the young lecturers in the university system. So most of them were in their late 20s, early 30s, you can say. And that was extremely successful. But they immediately said, no, 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 we don't want this. Well, because it's too new, it disturbs the status quo, and there were people who had a lot of, you can say, particular interests of different religions, and so on. And so they came up with different reasons why they really didn't want it. But mostly it was because it was so new and so successful that will naturally make people say, wait a minute, you know. And so what I've been doing subsequently is in different universities we've had like 1 day session, 2 day session, 3 day sessions. There have been different centers in different states of India that have asked me to come and do different configurations. We've done it in ORC in Delhi. We've done it in Shanti Sarovar in Hyderabad. I've had presentation for different IT companies like Infosys and other industries. They like their management people to have something like this, because in India there's just so many problems with values, and so I'm trying to sort of let it run around however it wants, basically. And then there are a few people who are really keen to be able to take it up and become teachers. And so then I encourage them to come to many types of trainings. We did one training for Kumaris for 3 weeks. And they really liked it. The long, long trainings are very good because people really get into it. They get into the dialoguing. And once you've had about 8 or 9 dialogues with the same group of people, and you start to become aware of any bad habits that you have in a very clear way, and you begin to be able to change that because you see it so clearly. And then we find that people will continue it. But a problem I have with the sisters is they're always too busy. So I'll just... Or you want to see something else quickly? We have half an hour. You want? So I can show you one of the other shows, which is not from this particular certificate course, but from... I don't think it's very well in focus. So this is from module number 7, and this one is talking about the whole subject of increasing personal strength, because why you can't apply your values is because you're not strong enough. And so personal strength includes things like moral fiber, divine virtues, elevated character, personal integrity, courage, self-respect. And when you have all that, then you can be a good philanthropist. And the opposite, personal weakness, things like moral laxity, vices, character defects, lack of integrity, and then you respond to challenges with cowardice as opposed to courage, and your motivating energy is really selfishness. So this is a very famous little statement that's often used in India. What is really valuable? You know, if you lose wealth, nothing is lost. If you lose health, something is lost. But if you lose character, everything is lost. So although we live in a highly materialistic culture, people still believe in this thing. But it's more like lip service, really. So the keys. One thing is what we call the principles of integrity, so we'll look at those shortly. There are some essential components of character development. We have to learn how to make choices that create inner harmony. We have to have our personal empowerment. Nobody can empower you. You have to empower yourself. And then we want to work with a strong inner moral authority, because the external moral authorities, parents, teachers, and religious leaders have basically betrayed everyone. And then you need good laws of the knowledge, knowledge of the laws of spirituality. So your personal strength actually depends on your integrity. And that means if you do have the value of integrity, you're honest, you have strong moral principles, you're undivided, you have internal consistency, you know how to perform moral reasoning, you have a refined conscience, and you refuse double standards and hypocrisy. So how do you form the criteria? See, most criteria are given by what we call the external moral authorities, the religious leaders, parents, and educational authority figures. And these criteria get passed down through the generations, and they form the prevailing ideas of society. So this is your morality. And so most people, they just go along with it. They adhere consciously or unconsciously. And these criteria are not usually integrated because most people don't challenge prevailing ideas. It's much too dangerous. And they don't think through the beliefs they acquired through their socio-cultural environment. So there's lots of different ideas about what's good and what's bad, who is fit to judge, what is a crime, what is appropriate punishment, why circumstances are good and bad, and why some people are fortunate and some are unfortunate. So let's look at the principles of integrity, because these really are the main keys. So the first one is that you become fully aware of your criteria for ethically correct or incorrect behavior. That means you have to sit down and figure it out for yourself. So this course, where people in a group are figuring out together, so you can take up different points and just discuss it for as long as you want. The second is that you check that your principles are consistent and coherent. Because if they're not consistent, you can't apply all of them. And if they're not coherent, it's not going to make any sense. And so you have to really apply your logic, your ability for moral reasoning or ethical reasoning gets developed in this process. Now, the third one is to integrate or own the principles on which you act. So that if you say, this is my principle, then when things go against that, you have to stick up for your principle. Otherwise, it's hypocrisy. And you need a lot of strength for this, you see. And as you start doing it, you acquire strength, because first of all, you have to be prepared to challenge ideas that are at odds with your principles. And that may be many of the prevailing social ideas. You have to keep on resisting double standards and hypocrisy. Everybody has it to a greater or lesser extent, but it's a continuing process to reduce the gap. You have taken time to assess each belief that you have acquired from the social environment. People don't have time. But when you sit in a group together, that means you're taking time and you start doing this assessment process. You check whether your motivations are congruent with your essential qualities of peace, love, purity, power, and bliss. Because these, you know, the essential elements of the soul, this is your reference point, you see, which is a spiritual reference point. And if your motivations are not congruent with those, then you have to think about it. You are reflective about your own behavior and you seek balance. We're not trying to be perfect in the sense of perfectionists or extremists or fanatics. So everything has to be balanced, and it varies from day to day how you feel about the balance. But if you keep on thinking about it, your balance level would become quite good. You have to keep on refining your capacity for moral reasoning or ethical reasoning. Every time you come up with an ethical challenge or an ethical dilemma, you have to apply your capacity for moral reasoning, and so you get better at it as time goes by. And then you maintain an open mind. You see, this is very important. So we go into a little bit about keeping an open mind. You see, most ideas about good and bad are polarized, and one side says, well, they're absolute. Another side says, no, 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 they're relative. And both of these are actually oversimplifications, because each and every moral challenge is unique. So the absolutists, their position is frequently based on scriptural references, and it can be descriptions of patriarchal attitudes, it can be distortions or propaganda, and a lot of the time it is the promotion of the views of the religious establishment. So this is, again, your morality is based very much on this absolutist position in a lot of social settings. Then you have the scientific position, because we are, after all, a very scientifically inclined world. So science is considered non-ethical because it doesn't refer to moral issues. So many scientists favor a value system based on the principles of physical pain or pleasure. And then some scientists can be rigid about scientific principles. There's no such thing as a soul, and that's that. And some are absolute materialists, and some are not keen on having an open mind. And they say that's not scientific. So there's a lot of variations there too. The relativist position is where your moral decisions are made with reference to precedent. And so the problem is that no two circumstances are the same. They may be similar. And so each moral challenge does require careful consideration and analysis, and a lot of people find this very difficult. So they seek advice from others, formulaic solutions, or they go back to the moral absolutists. Then we have what we call the spiritual perspective. And there, basically, we look at a gauge, and if something tends towards purity, peace, and happiness, then we would think that probably that's good or beneficial. And if it tends towards weakness and character defects, then we would say, well, this is probably bad or harmful. And how you use this gauge indicates whether your moral choice or inclination lead more towards integrity or more towards discordance. Then this process of choice, deciding whether an action or incident is good or bad, first of all you have to consider the thing in context, not in isolation. And we have to keep an open mind about it and be careful about trivializing or simplifying it. And a lot of situations are really very complex and they have many hidden ramifications. It's dangerous to just simplify it or trivialize it. So this moral reasoning, a very important skill which comes from the development of critical thinking. You know, a lot of people don't know how to do that. And the ability to critique a situation, be analytical and objective. And this also arises from having an open mind and from your connection with the divine. Because if you have a connection with the divine, you come from a place of stillness and not from preconceptions or prejudice. And then you can express the wisdom of the soul, and this whole process helps you to develop a refined conscience, you see. So the people who are studying this, we're sending them off towards the inner moral authority of conscience. And you can trust your conscience. This is a kind of moral leadership. You have to very often differentiate between what's morally right and what's legally permissible. Of course, there shouldn't be any difference, but there is a gap. For example, some laws are biased against some sections of the population. Some laws may violate human rights. Some laws give higher values to objects than human beings. And many laws favor the interests of the ruling party. So they're not to be trusted all the way. We talk a little bit about materialism. Materialism gives highest value to possessions, and the culture of materialism has led to the concept of ownership, and this is used to determine right and wrong in the legislature. And in that, objects tend to become more important than people. And this is very ambivalent because possessiveness is known to be an anti-value. Polarization. A person with a gun. It's a freedom fighter if the gun is used for a cause you approve of, or you would say a terrorist if the gun is used for a cause you disapprove of. Same person, same gun. Depends on your viewpoint whether you say it's a freedom fighter or a terrorist. Some spiritual criteria for integrity. You, the soul, experience integrity when your thoughts, words, and actions correspond to these original five elements of the soul: purity, peace, love, bliss, and power. And then we talk about soul-conscious action, which leads to positive consequences, health and well-being, purity, peace, and prosperity, an inner state of authenticity and benefit for all in the short term, medium term, and long term. So all these things are there to just make people think. And in contrast, materialism, thoughts, words, and actions which stem from materialism lead to an experience of discordance. So we don't say good and bad, but integrity and discordance. These are inner feelings. Also lead to loss of inner power and identification of the self as matter. And this then leads to the five vices that you're familiar with, and then the other five vices: fear, slander, laziness, jealousy, and hatred. These are then the negative emotions that motivate your actions when you're in materialistic consciousness or body consciousness. So what is negativity and why is it negative? Because it destroys your strength, it leads to unhappiness and sorrow, mental and physical states of disturbance, enslavement, discordant inner experiences, dishonesty, deception and untruth. This is why it's negative. So where you have loss of spiritual power, you tend to be motivated by material desires. And when spiritual power is restored, you tend to be motivated by spiritual values. And this is the reason why you need to develop spirituality and values together. So that's the end of that little presentation. And so gradually we're building up this bank of little PowerPoints, and we're going to make them with a recorded commentary and music and all that stuff, so that you can just download it and play it and look at it or show it to somebody else and have a discussion about it or however you want. And we're also finding that people need to learn this stuff in their own pace, because some of it's very deep and some people need just to take time to do it, you know. Yeah, I think it could be very useful. And the only thing is, it's taking us time to put the stuff together. And so take my card, be in contact, and we'll just make sure. And you probably would find it useful to buy a set of the books. The books are 50 rupees a piece, which is about a dollar. That's not too bad. And the whole set weighs 3 kilos. When you're thinking of carrying it back, that's an important consideration. But there are 10 books in the set. And I have 2 sets here. The rest are in Gyan Sarovar. So if you have to go immediately, you can get now. But otherwise, you can get from Gyan Sarovar. And then just sit with them. And go into the website and stay in touch with me and give me feedback, you know, and let me know what's happening, because that also helps to sort of develop the program and identify its usefulness in different contexts, you know. Yes? There's lots of different ways to use it, yeah. It's designed to help BKs to move forward in their BK life, you know. And this is what we find as the primary use of it. And then secondarily, it's an interface between us and different categories of non-BKs. And it's an upfront, full-on BK program. So that if anybody wants to present it, you know, you can see the books has got the logo and it says Brahma Kumaris here and there on it and so on. So we positioned it as a program that is taught by the Brahma Kumaris. And so different people who like to use different bits of it, it's nice if they say, you know, we're showing you this thing and it's coming from the Brahma Kumaris. So that way it helps to enable people to interact with BKs without having to necessarily be full-on Brahmins and make commitments for celibacy and vegetarianism and so on, but just really to get a little bit of depth of the knowledge. We tried to put it in secular terminology so that the religious terminology doesn't take the form of a barrier. It's been out since about 2004 and slowly, you know, moving around. It's been positioned as a program for India, but we found a lot of double foreigners are very interested in it. So there's no objection to you, you know, getting the material and so on. But it hasn't been positioned as a program that's offered in foreign in a full-on way. And I think one of the reasons is because we already have 2 values programs running in foreign countries. One is the values in healthcare from the Jenki Foundation, and then there is the Living Values Program. but I think the Living Values program is now a little bit on the sidelines because it's definitely separated off from BK and has its own organization that's, you know, connected, but not too much connected. So we'll see how it works. But you also have a lot of countries where the main BK people have Indian roots. And so for these ones, this is very, I think, very relevant. Yeah. Acha? Good. So if anybody wants the card which contains the material about the website and everything, somewhere in one of these pockets I had it. Where did I put it? Maybe I forgot it. But anyway, the website is www.valueeducation.org. Huh? Can't hear. .org. Yeah. Yeah. valueeducation.org. If you write .com, it'll go. It'll be alright. And if you want to email us, there is a thing called info@valueeducation.com, but we're moving that over to valueedtraining, V-A-L-U-E-D, training@gmail.com. We also have little groups of people who are doing it, little groups of BKs. Sister Becky in the Philippines has taken it up quite a lot. In Nepal, it's very actively going on. And there's a little group in San Francisco that's doing it as well. So basically, some experimentations are happening, and hopefully we can put it in such a way that you can actually study it by reading the books and looking at stuff that's on the internet and coming to some trainings as and when we set it up. But you see, the people are so many and so scattered that we thought that if we put it on internet, you know, and there'll be audio files and stuff that you can just listen to, and slowly, you know, you can listen to it while you're doing your ironing or whatever, or download it on MP3 while you go for a walk, and just listen to it however many times you want, and just work with it like a sort of self-education thing, you know. Yeah, but it's not really. And the books are there. And the books are actually better, but they're harder work because you have to sit there and fiddle, deal with them and study them and that stuff. But during this year, this MP3 stuff will be made ready. Acha. Thank you. Om Shanti.